Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Rob, as the producer of this show, once more I must insist that you instruct your staff to show me a little respect.
We're showing you as little respect as possible.
What can we do for you, Mel?
I came here to invite you to a party.
Hey, a party! When? When is the party?
Rob, the party's tonight at Allen's. He's giving a little dinner for a few of the network executives.
And you mean the star wants us to mingle with them?
Oh, yes, you may bring your wives, dates, or what have you.
Oh, goody, I'll bring my what have you.
I beg your pardon.
Well, he's not exactly a what have you. He's more of a what is it?
The Dick Van Dyke Show. Starring Dick Van Dyke. Rosemary.
All right, it's Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. So for over 90 years, Ms. Rosemary's husky voice, good looks, and comic timing has entertained us. Rosemary started her career at the age of 3 by starring in several of the earliest talking films, beginning with the 1929 short Baby Rosemary, The Child Wonder. She worked with all the greats of vaudeville, theater, radio, television, and film. She had a Broadway run in Top Banana. She made numerous guest appearances in all the hottest shows of the day, headlining in Vegas, appearing at some of the biggest nightclubs, starred in several television shows, including The Dick Van Dyke Show and The Doris Day Show, and of course, Hollywood Squares. She's really never stopped working. She's a legend and honestly one of the funniest women in the history of comedy, and that is the legendary Rosemary. Hello there, Ro.
Well, isn't that nice? What a wonderful saying. Thank you.
You're welcome. Absolutely. What a thrill to talk to you tonight. You know, your career, and I look at this, it truly has spanned over 90 years. And, you know,
it sure has.
Yeah, working since you were a kid. You were born in New York City, and your mom used to take you to the theater, and you would come home and sing the songs you just heard.
We lived in what they used to call a railroad flat on the bottom floor in New York City. And my mother loved the theater and loved it. And 14th Street in New York at that time was the 42nd Street at this time. And all the movies, all the theaters were there. And my mother loved show business, so she used to take me to see everything. I would go home and imitate everybody. Now, upstairs, the Polish people lived. And I would say to my mother, I'm going upstairs to show the Polak what I'm doing.
God.
I could say Polak because my mother was Polish.
That's right. There you go. There you go. You can. And so
I would go upstairs.
Yeah.
And I would do everything for them. And they would be, they were the ones that entered me in the amateur contest.
Oh, they were the ones. Okay, gotcha.
They were the ones. Yeah. My mother was afraid that I wouldn't do anything. She says she does it here. I don't know whether she was doing in front of an audience or anything like that. And the people said, she'll be fine. So they bought my dress, and they bought my brocaded shoes, which, by the way, are in the museum.
Smithsonian.
In Washington.
Yeah, and the Smithsonian Institute. You've got a ton of stuff there, which is amazing.
Yeah.
What Can I Say, Dear, After I Say I'm Sorry was the song you auditioned with. And you were about 3 years old, right? I mean, 3.
That's right.
Wow. I mean, just to have a memory to sing a song accompanied.
Well, first of all, I never sounded like a child.
Yeah, right.
Everybody used to say, that's a 90-year-old midget, you know. And no child sings like that because I sounded like Sophie Tucker. It was a heavy, harsh voice. And I've always had this heavy voice. And from the time I was 3 years old. And so everybody thought I was a midget until I was signed to NBC. And NBC sent me on a tour of theaters because they were affiliated with RKO.
Right.
And I would do vaudeville 52 weeks a year in each of the RKO theaters across the country. And I played in Chicago many, many times.
Yes, you did. You did, including the Palmer House. But you were performing, and I love that NBC did that because what it did is it introduced you to audiences live so they could see you.
That's right. And I had my program Sunday mornings at 10:15, every Sunday morning for 15 minutes, me, a piano player, and an announcer, and that was a show. And everybody used to write in, as I told you, said, that's not a child, that's a midget. So they would send this, me across the country to prove that I was a child.
Yeah.
And so many things happened along the way. I worked with some of the greatest vaudeville people. I learned how to do everything they did because they felt sorry for the kid, you know? And they would teach me how to juggle, how to do this, how to throw adagio dances and turns. They taught me everything. The vaudeville people I worked with were just wonderful. And they went into, a lot of people went into movies and television.
Yeah, and you were performing, and this is kind of wild because I didn't know this, and I read this in your book. You know, you performed in nightclubs that were kind of family-friendly. You think nightclubs, you think about adults, but there were some family-friendly venues that you could go perform at.
Oh, yeah. Nightclubs weren't what nightclubs later became. Nightclubs in those days, it was a family place where you could bring your family. There'd be a singer, a dancer, a dance team, a nice orchestra that you could dance with, and music, and you could bring kids. It was like a country club.
Yeah, yeah.
Nightclubs were very, very family-orientated. Not like later as they got into the sophisticated type of entertainment.
And I found about really your background, you know, probably about 20 years ago, but probably as a kid, I thought to myself, wow, she got started on the Dick Van Dyke Show. You did not. Obviously, it was 35 years before that. You had this whole other life of singing and comedy and nightclubs before that. And I was looking at some of the names you worked with. And first of all,
you said you read my book.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Oh, I loved it. Oh, God, it was a great story because I learned so much about you. I mean, I really didn't know about this whole other career that you had, you know?
Oh, I've had many careers.
You have. You have. You totally have. But, you know, you said you made records, RKO theater appearances, your own radio show where they called you the darling of the airwaves.
Yeah.
Paramount films and shorts. You were big long before the days of a Shirley Temple, and I know you knew Shirley.
Well, I was big in my area. She was big in her area. She was in the movies. I was doing all live stuff.
Yeah, amazing. And in all this live stuff, in vaudeville.
I had my own program,
yeah.
Coast to Coast, when I was 5 years old.
That's crazy. I know, it's wild. For 7 years. I mean, you had a seven-year contract with these folks. But you worked with some of the greats even when you were a kid. I was looking at this. Edgar Bergen, Dick Powell, Milton Berle, when you were a child.
You know, I want to tell you something.
Yeah.
I remember everybody, and there isn't anybody that I haven't worked with or been with or did a movie with. It's amazing. And Dave, they're all gone.
Yeah, they are all gone.
They're all gone. Yeah. I'm the only one that remembers them.
Yeah, right. Well, you know what? I'm in my late 40s, and I'm kind of one of those guys that likes to keep these legends alive. Because, you know, I talked to Don Rickles earlier last year.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
And I know
he
you worked with
dear,
him.
Dear friend.
Yeah. No, I know that. Back in the day, were your parents very involved in managing your career?
Or my father.
Your father. Okay.
My father. As in the book, my father. My mother stayed home and took care of my brother.
And you were about, I think it was about when you were 16, you were finally a teenager, you worked, I was looking at the list of nightclubs you worked at, the Versailles nightclub in New York. This was a hot nightclub.
That's how I started, because New York had a child labor law because of all the young kids that worked in Europe, the 10 cents a dollar or something. It was the child labor law in New York that you couldn't sing or dance in New York. And the only way you could get away with it is if you were an actress and could do a part, but you couldn't sing or dance. So when I was 16, the first thing I did was the Versailles Club in New York, where I sang and did an act.
Wow. And I'm looking at you performed there, Bob Hope, Dean Martin, Desi Arnaz, Jerry Lewis. I mean, this was one of the big clubs in the country.
Yeah.
The Copacabana in New York, the Palmer House in Chicago.
I worked at Schaeferie many times.
Yeah.
Many, many times. The Chicago Theater, the Capitol Theater in New York, 3 or 4 times a year. And I opened up Las Vegas. You read the story.
Yeah, the Flamingo. And I've heard you tell it, too. The Flamingo Hotel you opened up.
Yeah, right.
which was owned by
Bugsy
Siegel, Big Mobster. And I know over your career, you crossed paths with the likes of Bugsy, Al Capone, you know, these mafia figures that
They were my buddies.
Yeah, they helped you, right?
I had to be... First of all, I was at the Palace Theater in Chicago working with Milton Berle. And somebody came backstage. The doorman came backstage and said, we want to see you, Rosemary. And so he called my father, and my father came out with me, and there was Al Capone in a limousine.
Wow.
And waiting by the door then. And he said to my father, he says, hello, Happy. I didn't know my father's name was Happy. They called him Happy Hank.
Wow.
And he was involved with the mob years ago. I mean, he was one of the guys that used to burn buildings if you don't join the union.
Oh, yeah.
And things like that.
Yeah.
He was a minor part of the mob. And so Al called him and said, we want to meet the kid. Everybody wants to meet the kid. They love her. So my father says he does 4 shows a day. He said, well, we'll bring her back in time, but the car won't see her. We'll be around tomorrow. And my father said, okay. And when we went backstage, the doorman said, do you know who that was? And I said, no. He said, that was Al Capone. I said, who is Al Capone?
Yeah, you're just a kid, of course.
You know. And so the next day, the big limo came, and we went out to Cicero, which is where they live,
yeah,
into this house. And there was this long table with about 20, 25 guys sitting there. And I came in, and Al Capone met me at the door, picked me up in his arms, and said, you're our baby. You call me Uncle Al.
Wow.
I said, okay, Uncle Al. You know, what am I going to say? Uncle Al.
Of course, of course.
And introduced me to everybody at the table. They all came up and hugged me because he says, we love you. We'll take care of you. Don't worry about anything. And Al Capone said to me, tell my father. He said, you come if anything you want, anything she needs, you come to us. We'll protect her from here on in. Don't worry about it. She'll be all right.
Wow. Wow.
And that's how I started in with Vegas. I mean, Vegas was full of the mob. And they were honest to God, Dave, they were the greatest people in the world.
That's what Don Rickles had said to me,
like
too.
A queen.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. And a lot of younger people don't understand that, you know, Vegas is like Disney now.
Vegas in those days. Well, see, we were the third hotel on the Strip. There was the El Rancho and the Last Frontier. And it was all cowboy-type houses and stuff. But all sand, nothing but desert. And all of a sudden, Bugsy decided to build a thing like Monte Carlo with neon and lights and this and high croupiers and all that. And Vegas wasn't used to that. And they were afraid of it. And, of course, knowing he was not a man of building buildings, they took him for every dime he had. And the mob got mad after $2 million. They said, no more money. That's why they called him Bugsy. They said, you're crazy, building a hotel in the desert. And then he been in partnership with the owner of the Hollywood Reporter. And he said, I'll give you the money. And that's how the hotel got started. And
wow.
Bob was mad at him. And poor Bugsy must be turning over in his grave to
wow.
see what Vegas is today.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. It's Disney. It's Disney. You got kids running into you at 1 o'clock in the morning.
It's worse than Disney.
Yeah.
It's worse than Disney.
And I say that with all due respect.
Over the hotel, another mob member would be ahead of it. The Desert Inn had one guy. The Thunderbird had another guy. Every hotel had their own mob guy running it. And believe me, Dave, when I tell you, it was a pleasure to work there.
I bet.
They treated you like a queen.
I bet. We're talking to the legendary Rose Marie. You know, when did comedy? Because I know, you know, when we're talking about opening the Flamingo and doing this, you were singing. I mean, singing was such a big part of your career. When did the comedy part? That came a lot later, didn't it?
Well, no, it sort of, I'm nuts anyway, you know, but it sort of came when I had to replace a woman that got sick at the Coconut Grove in Hollywood. And my husband at that time, my husband died in 1964, you know that.
Yeah, very young age. Yeah, I'm so sorry, yeah.
Terrible, terrible. Lost my life, really lost half of my life. And I never married again.
Yeah.
Because nobody could follow him.
Yeah.
And he said to me, he said, you know, if you do this, you're replacing somebody. You got to do more than 45 minutes because it's just you. Before, I used to be an opening act. But Danny Thomas, Nero Marcel, and people like that. But now I only did 3 or 4 songs, and that was it. And then I started talking and started doing little bits in my act. And my husband says, you got to do more than that. You got to do 45 minutes if you're going to play the Coconut Grove.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to do 45 minutes. And I said, what do I do? He says, talk. Just talk.
Yeah.
Just say anything that comes to your mind. Talk.
But where did that sense of humor come from?
Everything I said came out well.
Yeah.
And then Maury Amsterdam, mm-hmm. God bless him a million times. I met him when I was in California the first time. And we became very good friends. He and his wife, in fact, I'm his daughter's godmother.
Wow. You know, and I don't think people understand that. I think you were 10 or 11 when you met Maury. I mean, that's how
that's
far
right.
You went back.
Exactly
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And back in New York, we got together. We became friends. He and his wife, me and my husband. And whenever I'd go anyplace, I'd say, gee, I'm starting to get a little comedy. I said, could you write me a couple of things? He said, well, I know how you talk, and I know how you do things. Here's a couple of things. Try these out. And he would write material for me. And that's how I started doing comedy.
Wow. Wow. I mean, it just but it seems from all these years to come just so naturally for you, because you can have somebody write for you and you can have somebody do it. If you don't have that comic timing, if that's not somewhere in your blood, Ro, there's no comedian that can make it. You had it in your blood already.
But see, that's what Maury used to say. You sound like Maury.
Is that right?
Maury used to say to me, he told me one time, he said, we were working a place. It was the third time I went back. And I said, Maury, I need some new stuff. I have, you know, I've been there 3 times. And he said, and he gave me a joke. And I said, that's terrible. He says, you say it and I'll guarantee you a big laugh. I said, Maury, you've never failed me. This is terrible. He says, try it. He says, I know you. I know how to write for you. I know how you work. This is going to be a big joke for you. I said, okay, but I said, I don't think it's funny. So I went back. It was in Chicago, by the way.
All right, okay.
At the, what's the name of that place? Anyway, it was in the Round.
Okay.
I went down and I was on stage and I said, I just got back from Hollywood and Maury Amsterdam gave me a new joke and he says, it's going to get me a big laugh. I said, I don't think it's funny. That's what he does.
Okay.
And the audience started laughing. And I said, if you laugh at this joke, I said, you're a better man than I am. But I don't think it's funny. I said, if you think it's funny, laugh, please. So I said the joke, which was just a stupid, stupid thing. It was fat and skinny went to bed, fat rolled over, skinny dead. And everybody screamed.
It's classic.
And I said, oh, my God, he was right. Maury said, I told you, I know how you work. Oh. I know your timing. I know how you'll do it.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And it amazes me how long you were friends with him because, again, 10 years old, 11 years old, through your nightclub act. But even in the early days of television, you did some radio, too. You did Phil Harris and Alice Faye. But you were with Maury.
Well, thank God. I've always had a sense of humor.
Yeah.
A crazy sense of humor, but a sense of humor.
Yeah. But, you know, in the nightclubs, you know, you knew Maury. But then he had one of the, and people might not know this either. I mean, you did Texaco Star Theater with Milton Berle, but you did the Maury Amsterdam show. It was kind of like a nightclub show on the Dumont Network in the 40s, I think.
That's when he had his own place in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was his place that they actually taped it at. Oh, that's
yeah.
Wild. Yeah.
But Maury and I have been friends since I've been 10 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. And going back to Phil Harris and Alice Faye, that's where you met Sheldon Leonard for the first time. Am I correct?
To be truthful, Dave, I really don't remember when I met him, but I guess I did. I know that my husband, who was first trumpet player at NBC, and he did all the big shows in California, Bing Crosby and Alice Faye, Phil Harris. And so we got very friendly with Phil and Alice, and we'd go over the house, and I would start imitating Sheldon Lennon, kidding around.
Yeah, of course.
And Alice said, why don't we do it around the show? Let her be as Sheldon's sister and let her talk like that. And that's how I did that. That started it.
Yeah, obviously. A long-time relationship, obviously, with Sheldon.
God. He and Danny Thomas. I opened for Danny as a singer as an opening act for Danny in New York at La Martinique when he came in from Chicago to go to New York and be a big star.
Chicago guy. Yeah.
And I was his opening act, and we became very friendly, very close. His wife's name was also Rosemarie, so we became very friendly. And when he came out to California, we had come out again from California, and Bobby did his show, and he did Bing Crosby, and he did LFA, he did George Gobel, he did NBC. He was top man in the business. And we would know all these people on a friendly basis, you know. Between he and me, we knew everybody.
Of course. Well, here's another one. Jackie Gleason, you did...
Oh, my God, right? Jackie.
Nightclubs.
Jackie Gleason and I did club dates for $5 a piece in Newark, New York, Newark, New Jersey.
Wow.
Years and years ago at the Proctor's Theater, just doing an act or just coming out and singing a song. And Jackie went to Florida, became a big star, and I used to go see Jackie, and that's how I met Jackie at the Club 18 in New York. And then everywhere he would go, he would call me, said, I want you to work with me. I said, okay, fine. I work. I'd do anything but work. And so when he got to Florida and became a big star, he said to me, I was working in Hollywood, he said to me, I want you to come out and do my first show. And he said, I'll pay you more money than you've ever been paid before on television. And he paid me $5,000.
Wow. That's a lot for back then.
First and last show in Florida every year.
Wow. That's amazing. What a good friend. Yeah, what a great friend.
We used to write to one another.
Is that right?
We call one another.
Oh, that's great.
Because we both started at the same time.
Yeah. Well, you were you were and are very highly respected. You know, even through the years on the sitcoms that you did, you were treated as an equal. I mean, females weren't back then from a comic standpoint, and you were.
Yeah. Well, the only one that ever called me baby and continued to call me baby were George Burns and Lucille Ball.
Is that right? That's wild. Oh, wow.
They never called me Rosemarie, they say baby.
They knew you from back then. That is awesome. And you were frequently on the Bob Cummings Show, Gary Moore, George Gobel, Dean Martin, Red Skelton. You did Gunsmoke, The Virginian, Dobie Gillis. And then you got a TV role in 61 called My Sister Eileen. It was a sitcom, right?
That started me in episodic television.
Yeah.
That was the first thing I did in episodic television. The first thing I did on television as an actress, I did Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke, that's right, in the mid-50s, yeah.
And then I went on to I have a resume. It's choke a horse.
Oh, it's
really
a mile long. It's a mile long. And then came the Dick Van Dyke Show, and we're talking to the legendary Rosemarie, and there's more with her next on 720 WGN.
If you are correct with Rosemarie, you'll have the extra tie game. Incorrect circle will get the square. Rose, it's up to you, this particular game. A famous television personality has written a novel titled Everything a Man Could Want. Who wrote it?
I did. It's my autobiography. And it's not selling, Peter.
It's Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to the legendary Rosemarie on her amazing 90-year career in every entertainment venue that there is. You mentioned to me, Ro, that you worked and knew Danny Thomas and Sheldon Leonard. And there was one day after you did a short-lived sitcom that you got a call to report to Desi Lou, and that was for the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Well, what happened was when I worked in Vegas, Danny Thomas and Sheldon were very close friends, and they always came to see me in Vegas. And Sheldon used to say to me, don't you ever bomb? And I said, not that I can help it, you know. And Danny Thomas had a show called Make Room for Daddy.
Right, right, right.
And I said, we're friends, we're family. Why the hell don't I do your show? I want a guest shot.
Yeah.
And he would say,
reasonable.
Your time will come.
Mm-hmm.
Your time will come. And I'd say, fine. You know, that was it. So one day I got a call, and they said, go down to Desi Lou, Danny Thomas show. I said, I finally got it. And I went down. That's when I met Carl Reiner.
Wow.
And Sheldon said in front of me, which made me very proud, if you want the best, get Rosemarie.
Wow. Yeah.
And Carl said, I didn't read for the part. I didn't have to do anything.
Mm-mm.
I walked in and it was my part. And I met everybody and I said, who have you got to the third writer?
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm jumping a very important thing.
Yeah.
When they told me to come down to Desi Lu, I said, oh, I finally got the guest shot on the show. And the woman said, no, this is for a new show called The Dick Van Dyke Show. I said, what's a Dick Van Dyke? Just go down there.
Yeah.
So I went down there, yeah. And I met Carl and Sheldon, and I read the part. I didn't have to read for it. The part was mine. I looked at the script, and I said, who have you got to the third writer? And they said, well, we haven't picked him yet. And I said, what about Maury Amsterdam? He knows every joke. He's known as the joke machine.
Yeah, of course.
He's absolutely fantastic. He'd be perfect for this. Do you know where we could reach him? I said, I have his home phone number. So I gave him the phone number. I came home. I called him up, and I said, they're going to call you for a new show called The Dick Van Dyke Show. He says to me, what's The Dick Van Dyke?
Of course he did.
I said, I don't know, but get your ass out of here.
That's fantastic.
He says, I'll see you Monday. He never read to the plot. They just took him.
I bet. Oh, I bet. That's amazing to hear that because the chemistry on this show was so incredibly natural. It blew me away.
I'm so glad you noticed that.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was very true.
I mean,
everybody knew what everybody was going to do. Everybody looked out for one another. Everybody makes jokes about, oh, we're like a family. That show, honest to God, was like a family.
That's amazing. It's amazing. And it was at a time, Robert, where sponsors had to buy the show to get it on the air. And I know Procter & Gamble and Kent Cigarettes, I think, were the sponsors for the show.
Yeah.
But after the first season, a lot of people don't know this, it kind of was canceled until summer reruns came around.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and as
we
were
sold when we made the pilot.
Yeah. Yeah, you didn't have to show anything. And I know Carl wrote like 10 episodes in a row. Like he was moving.
Well, it was Carl's show. Carl wrote 13 episodes and he made a pilot of himself as
right.
Dick Van Dyke.
Head of the family, yeah.
And it was terrible.
Yeah, it wasn't that good.
And he came out to California with Sid Caesar, I guess. I don't know. But he saw Sheldon, and Sheldon said, this is a great show. He says, but you're not going to be in it. He says, you be the producer. And Carl says, well, I want to play it. He says, this is for somebody else. But you produce the shows. You write the shows. And Sheldon went back to New York and found Dick Van Dyke in Bye Bye Birdie.
Wow.
And said, he's the one to play it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Dick wasn't known at all.
No, he really wasn't. No.
Nobody knew who the hell he was.
They didn't know Mary Tyler Moore either. I mean, she was a hot point commercial girl.
She was the last thing that ever was cast anyway.
Yeah.
We were all set, and Danny was looking for the girl with three names.
To match Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I know you've stayed really close friends to Dick Van Dyke over the years.
Oh,
as well.
Yes,
yeah.
Very.
Yeah.
Dick gives me a lot of credit for a lot of things I don't deserve.
Oh, that's sweet. That's sweet. And I'm, you know, so hard to hear of Mary's passing at such a young age as well. But Richard Deacon for you, he was like an older brother to you, wasn't he?
Oh, God, he was wonderful. He really was my older brother. He really was. I mean, so much so that when my husband died, he used to come over and say, I'm going to take you out to dinner, get dressed. You're going out of the house. And he was the one that got me out of my doldrums. I was in bad shape, Dave, when my husband died.
Yeah, Yeah.
We were married 20 years very, very happily. And I mean, you could say love of my life, really.
Yeah.
I never married again. I couldn't be bothered because nobody could fill that shoe.
And so they were a family to you. I mean, right?
Nick took me out like his date. I mean, he took me to Rock Hudson's house, to this one's house. And Rock Hudson was wonderful. And I used to say to Rock, I said, I hate that name. I'm going to call you Sam. He said, I want you to do me a favor. And I said, what? He said, I'm having a party. Will you be the hostess? And that's what they all did. They all helped me.
Wow.
It was just wonderful.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's what family's all about. And as you said, this was a family.
They were all such good friends. Every one of them was so kind to me. It was, I can't tell you anybody that was mean to me or nasty to me or any. I can't tell you. I wish I could.
Yeah.
I'd give you a good story.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, that's awesome.
I can't. Everybody respected me and loved me. And the last thing I did, episodically, I did something just a little while ago. I did the voiceover in Garfield. You know the cat?
Yep. Yes, I do. Yep.
I played a witch in the cat in that cartoon that's going to come out soon.
Oh, that's great. That is fantastic. That is fun.
And Richard used to take me to all these things to keep me going and take me out to dinner. He'd say, get dressed. I'm taking you out to dinner. I said, I don't want to go. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
He says, get dressed because whatever you're wearing is what you're going to be seen in.
That's great.
So we were very close. I mean, it sounds like a cliche or trying to make an impression. I'm just telling you the truth.
Yeah. It's nice to hear. It's nice to hear because it's kind of what viewers have in their mind when they watch the show and see the camaraderie. It's nice to hear that behind the scenes, that was very prevalent as well.
And do you know that if you didn't like the way he said a line or you thought maybe it might be better this way, you could go over to him and say, I think maybe if you try it this way, you might be better. Nobody got mad.
Yeah.
Nobody got insulted.
Everyone just wanted to make it better.
I'll try it. I'll try it.
Yeah.
You know, like that. It was wonderful. It was, and the director, John Rich, oh, God, what a wonderful man. And, of course, Jerry Paris.
Yeah.
When John died, Jerry Paris took over.
Yeah.
And he was just great.
Yeah.
I mean, we were very lucky. We had wonderful, wonderful people.
I
even went into the editing room. John wanted me to be a director. He said, you'd be great as a director. He says, because you know what to do.
Yeah.
He says, I want you to see how this is done. And took me into the editing room.
You know, and that's great because, you know, when you've been in the business as long as you have, it's great to know more than one thing, right?
Oh, I got to tell you, it's one of my favorite stories. This is my conceited story.
Okay.
I did a show called, I forgot the name of it. It was the last show of the season.
Okay.
And I was called in. And the director and everybody was wonderful, and we were working. And while we were working, the director called me over and said, I wish the show wasn't the last show of the season because you would be on every show. Nobody has worked as good as they do with you. It's a pleasure.
How nice is that?
Thank you. Now, the topper, we're doing the show, and in the middle of the show, I go, sir, I said, should I move on this line or should I sit down on this line? And he looked at me and said, you're asking me?
That's awesome. You earned that respect.
I said, you're the director. He said, you do what you want to do, honey. You're doing all right.
That's
and
great.
That was in front of an audience.
Yeah.
It made me very proud.
Yeah, of course. Of course. You earned that respect, you know? Absolutely.
And then Four Girls Four. Did you ever hear about that?
Yes, I did. Yeah, yeah. Tell us about that.
That was spectacular, Dave. That was the best show that ever happened.
And
we played around for about 4 or 5 years all around the country.
Yeah, it was
we
a tour.
Played every place 3 and 4 times.
Yeah, and that
was just great.
That was, I mean, you know, and then you're touring. Speaking of your touring, I mean, you know, you did that, but then. You know, you toured with Rosemary Clooney, Margaret Whiting, Helen O'Connell. I mean, you were with, you know, it was amazing, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. It was fantastic. And it was, I mean, each year it got better and better. And as I say, we used to play each place almost 2 and 3 times.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, because you'd be invited back because, of course, it was a hit, I am sure. Did you have any – I want to close out the Dick Van Dyke Show a little bit here. Did you have any, like really, truly, this is one of my – it was one of my favorite episodes of all time. I'm sure you've been asked that before.
What? What are you talking about?
Oh, do you have a favorite episode of the Dick Van Dyke Show?
Do I have a favorite
episode? Yeah.
Well, my birthday party, because it gave me a chance to – be dramatic and funny all in one.
Sure.
It's my birthday party show.
Of course. Of course. And I have to tell you, I've got 3 young kids, 16, 11, 4 years old, and we have a Christmas party every year, about 100 of our closest friends, family, and so forth. And Alan Brady Show presents. First of all my kids have seen the Dick Van Dyke Show. We take bets on whether Rob's going to trip around the ottoman, you know, in the beginning. Is he going to trip? Is he going to skip? It's fantastic. But at our Christmas parties, one of them that we did, we passed out the lyrics to I Am a Fine Musician from the Alan Brady Show Presents. And literally, I had a friend of mine play the piano, and like groups of us took a part and sang the song, very much like those parties happened, you know, back in the day, you know?
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, always fun.
That's wonderful.
Always fun. And you did so many game shows over the years, you know, to tell the truth. I was looking at this list, $25,000 pyramid, I've Got a Secret, Password, What's My Line, but the big show.
Oh, I did I was the Arlene Francis of the West.
You were. The Hollywood Squares, top row center for 15 years. That show was perfect for you. So quick.
Yeah. It was wonderful. And the only reason that they gave it to me was because after my husband died, I didn't want to sing. I didn't want to do anything. And the lady that used to book the Hollywood Squares, Mary Markham, she called up and she says, I want you to do this show. You don't have to sing. You don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. Just sit and answer questions. You can relax. And that's how I got to do Hollywood Squares.
Wow. Wow. I mean, you know, your reactions, and I remember this as a kid, the questions, the contest, the fellow stars, you know, I mean, the kindred bonding you had with people like Paul Lynde and George Gobel and anyone who was
on
that
show. You got to remember that Peter Marshall was a big help.
Yeah, I bet.
That because he knew how to handle you. He knew when to cut you off. He knew when to lead you on. He was the perfect man to be the host there. In fact, Peter is the documentary talker on my documentary.
Yeah, which we're going to get to in a little bit. I'm really excited about that. That's in progress, of course.
We saw it last week, and it was wonderful. There's still a couple of things they want to fix, but it's something you'll never see before. It was unbelievable.
I love that.
It's never been done like that. It's not Rosemarie following her around the house or anything like that.
No,
it's not like that.
It's looking at your life.
This is my whole life. And he got everybody, he got actors to portray me.
Oh, that's cool.
He got his 3-year-old daughter to play Baby Rosemarie.
I love that. I love that. I love that. Well,
put a black wig on her and made her. She didn't care for it, but she did it.
but you know what? People, as I said to you before, you know, there are people that are fans of you from it could be all of your life, but from a certain time in your life. They might just know you from Hollywood Squares. They might not just know you from Dick Van Dyke.
I know that better than you do.
Yeah.
And
I'm excited.
Everybody thinks I didn't do anything before Dick Van Dyke.
No, and I'm glad that this story of your entire career, which again, over, you know, I don't want to say how old you are, but for over almost 9 decades, you've been performing on stage. It's great to be able to see that story from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
it'll be very interesting, really. I think you'll like it, Dave.
Yeah,
I really do.
I bet. And I was, you know, and I know better than this, but, you know, you've got that trademark bow. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it, but I know that you've always kept that and why that's so important and what it represents
it's
to yourself.
It's an important part of my life.
Yeah.
That's all I will tell
that's
you.
That's it. But your bow and numerous other items, you said your shoes as a kid from your career, are all enshrined in the Smithsonian Museum of American History. What an honor that must be.
It is a great, great honor First of all, because I'm an American, it's a great honor.
That's right. I'm with you. I'm with you on that. Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you, and I remember, you know, I have to say, you know, you have so many more friends in the business. Doris Day, of course, that you work with.
We're still very close. We talk to one another about once a month.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, we talk on the phone like two old broads.
I love that. I love that. I love hearing that. And so many more friends in the business that you worked with over the years. I was looking at this list because it is really nonstop. You've worked with everybody. I'm just touching a little bit of it. But Jonathan Winter, Steve Allen, Bob Hope, Dinah Shore.
Oh, my God. Jonathan, He's a very, very dear friend.
Jonathan
Winter. He used to come over to my house and say, when are you going to make linguine? Because I was a very good cook.
Awesome.
He says, I'm coming over for linguine.
Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, Phil Silvers, Merv Griffin.
Phil Silvers, I did Top Banana with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Broadway show.
Yeah.
He was the sweetest man that ever lived.
You worked with everybody who was anybody. You really have.
I knew Milton Berle from the time I was 3 years old. In fact, Milton used to go around telling everybody he was the only one that ever saw me with no top. Because I was 3 years old.
Oh.
And I was bathing in Atlantic City with just pants like a 3-year old kid.
Right, so. Exactly. Oh, that's
I'm
awesome.
The only one that ever saw her top.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Milton and I were very, very dear friends. Milton wrote a couple of things for me too. He was very, very clever in that department.
Wow.
But we knew each other. I did a Broadway show with him, Spring in Brazil.
But you were always popping up on shows like I would as a kid watch reruns of The Monkees, and I'd be like, oh my gosh, there's Rosemarie on The Monkees,
yeah. You
know, and The Love Boat, Murphy Brown and Cagney and Lacey, Caroline in the City, which you did with Maury. Like he played your husband, I think, right?
You're right.
Yeah.
And, oh, there's a lot, Dave.
Yeah, there's a lot. And the one of the last things I wanted to mention, the Dick Van Dyke Show Revisited, that was done back in 2004. How amazing was that, getting together with everybody and working in character again?
It was just great. It was like we never left.
Yeah.
We just picked up where we left. It was just wonderful.
Yeah.
And Carl was absolutely marvelous. He just put everything together again. It was just great.
Amazing.
And everybody was there. I don't think Maury was there. I think Maury had died by then.
Right. Maury and Jerry. Yeah. And Richard, of course. Gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jerry Paris. And I'm trying to think. The guy that played, supposed to be my boyfriend, Herman Glimcher.
Herman Glimcher. That was fantastic.
I think he was there,
He was there.
I think they tried to marry us off.
They did. Provide some closure, you know, for your character, of course. But TV comedies, game shows, countless TV appearances on the biggest variety shows, Broadway, music, movies, radios, commercials, nightclubs, albums. You are one of the most diverse actors, comedians, and singers in entertainment. 50 years from now, what do you want people to know about Rosemarie?
That I was here.
Yeah,
I was on this earth.
You were.
I was on this earth and trying to bring happiness to everybody.
And you have, my dear. And looking forward to getting to see this documentary of your life.
I hope you see it. I hope you love it. Really, I do.
I'm sure I will. And we'll talk about
By
it when
the
it
way,
comes out. Yeah.
The producer is Jason Weiss. He is a genius. Dave, he's going to be a big man. He's going to be bigger than Spielberg.
I love hearing that.
Absolutely a genius.
I love hearing that. And I look forward to the film as well. The legendary.
He is a genius. And he's like 36 years old.
Wow.
He's going to be a big, big man. Remember I told you.
I will remember that. The legendary Rosemarie. Again, a pleasure talking to you, dear.
My pleasure, Dave. You've been just wonderful listening to all my garbage.
Are you kidding me? This has been a thrill. Big fan for years. Thank you again, dear.
Well, I'm pleased to have met you, and I'm pleased to talk to you, and I'm glad I could tell you anything you wanted to know.
I loved it. We'll do it again soon. Thanks again.
I hope so. Thank you so much.
All right. It is 720 WGN.